Hi, I'm Sharon Sneer. You're listening to Grief's Gift, a podcast that explores stories of loss and grief and how and where to find within these painful times some of life's most beautiful gifts. We all have the freedom to make choices out of the losses we experience. Courageous, creative, collaborative, and conscious choices that so often become the gifts we hold most dear. So welcome to the conversations, meditations, and connections that are grief's gift. Hi, this is Sharon Sneer, and this is a new episode of Grief's Gift. Today I want to introduce someone that's very special to me, Juliette Martine. Juliette is not only a healer, a manifestation coach, she's also an intuitive business mentor, an author, and a spiritual teacher. But even more than that, Juliette is my cousin. And the way we met was so extraordinary. One could only assume that there was a higher power at work. Because when I met Juliette, neither she nor I had any idea we were related. Now that's another story. But I just want to put that in to show that sometimes things happen that are far beyond our own intentions or expectations. So for the past 20 years, Juliette has worked with literally thousands of clients throughout the world, helping these people clear their blockages, transform their energy, and heal on all levels of their being. Healing includes the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual levels of who we are, so that they can connect with themselves at a deeper level and move forward in life with greater ease and joy to fulfill their higher purpose and potential. Juliette works one-to-one with individuals as well as running numerous online courses, programs to help you stand in the full light of who you are and what you truly are. Her latest book, Choosing Love Above All Else, a navigational guide for inner and outer peace, is due to be released later this year. And it is such a pleasure to have you here, Juliette. How are you?
I am wonderful. I'm kind of grinning, actually, because whilst you said our story about having met and that we are cousins is something for another time, actually, I think it's a brilliant starting point for this conversation.
Good, because I know you have worked with so many people, and during the time when Oren died, you were one of the one or two people that held space for me without any resistance, and you allowed me to be wherever I was, wherever I needed to be, without any interruption or any of the feelings that you may have that might have caused me to be uncertain about how far I needed to go. So I need to thank you for that.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not. Thank you. It's in the sense of if that's my expertise, being good at grief. You know, it's such an interesting topic because I myself don't particularly relate to the word grief, but I definitely relate to the word loss and all of the gifts that come from loss and our willingness to let go. And in a sense, sometimes grief is the struggle we do with not letting go. And I'm comfortable with letting go. I've had to let go of a lot of things in life. And, of course, there are things that I struggle to let go of and hold on to, and there perhaps is my struggle with grief.
So, Juliette, what is it within you that you have struggled with and have found yourself able to overcome and enable yourself to birth yourself through that? What have you gone through?
Well, let's start with having discovered you in my life. The reason why I was smiling in the introduction was because I first met you at a time when I was stepping forward as a healer, stepping forward on my spiritual path. I was stepping out of the mainstream framework of how you go about being in the world, working a 9-to-5 job or an 8-to-6 job or a 7 to 10 job as I had in my previous corporate life. And I was stepping forward in a way where I found that my normal circle of family and friends didn't necessarily understand me and who I was becoming. And it was actually a process of grief where I felt a deep sense of grief that my immediate family, whom I loved dearly, didn't necessarily get me. And I remember actually crying out and sobbing that I longed for family who understood me. And I think it was about 48 hours later that you walked into my clinic.
Your turquoise clinic.
For my turquoise clinic for a healing session. You were dressed in a turquoise skirt. You had this short black Cleopatra haircut. You were the most exotic thing I'd seen. And you sat in my clinic chair and with a slightly edgy attitude said to me, "I don't know why I'm here. I don't normally go and see healers, but I'm here, so you might as well do something."
Yes, I was incredibly arrogant.
And I didn't know who you were. I didn't recognize your name. And we did a healing session. And as it transpired, there are a few things that came up during the healing session that were quite unique to your personal life story, that I recognized them from stories that I had heard my mother and father speak of when I was a very young child, that I thought, what are the chances that there are two people in this world that have exactly the same story? That at the end of the healing session, I said to you, "I'm going to say a really strange thing here, but is it possible that you are related to this person?" And you said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, that person is actually my mother. And that means that you're a cousin of my mother, which means you and I are cousins." And we both, well, I certainly sobbed afterwards, realizing I have family who gets me. I have equally weird, strange, funky, bizarre, wonderful, magical unicorn family in Sharon who get me.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say the same thing happened to me, because I went to you, oh, for so many reasons. I was in the process of writing the 12 Levels of Being and I had a backache. And what came out of that session was just so perfect. You know, I don't even know if you were channeling or what you were doing, but I remember clearly when we were discussing one of the levels, and it was level 12, and someone through you were channeling, said that you enter through the slipstream of life. And for me, that was the key. That was just perfect. I got it. I understood it. It was magic. And for me, all the cells in my body sort of just turned on, and I got my answer in that one sentence. I knew it. I got it. And to hear that you are my cousin, well, I never wanted to let you go. And I haven't, and I won't.
Neither have I. And that came from me letting go of what felt for me a very painful truth at the time, was that my family didn't get me. Love them dearly, but they didn't necessarily relate to the path I was on, or it didn't resonate for them in a way that was meaningful. Didn't mean it was good, bad, or otherwise, and there was no right or wrong, but my sense of connection wasn't there in the same way that I, in the moment of meeting and experiencing you and realizing that we're on a very similar path, I had that immediate connection with you, and it felt and meant all the more to me that I now had a family member by birth, by relation, that understood me. So I wasn't alone in my family as the individual that I am.
Yeah. You know, as I was listening to that, I realized that there was something contradictory that we just explored together with regards to letting go. And my experience of meeting you was something I never wanted to let go. So let me ask you a question. Do you think it's possible to let go but not let go at the same time?
Ooh, let me sit with that for a moment. Can we let go I think that's a that is a bit of a contradiction. I think that's a bit tricky to do, to let go and not let go at the same time. You know, the not letting go is our attachment.
So maybe we can hold on to the connection in a heart connection, but let go of that person when the time is right.
Well, I think that's where you perhaps come full circle back to the slipstream of life, where everything is interconnected, always was, always will be, and always is. And so in the letting go, we allow ourselves to feel that universal, everlasting connection that everything is ultimately interconnected. But we're not grasping at it. We're not holding on to it. We're not keeping it in the form that it was, which is usually in some sort of, has some sort of physical attachment to it. We're holding on to a memory of what was and trying to keep it that way because we're fearful of letting go. Ultimately, that, you know, when I say I don't necessarily relate to grief, maybe my ability to let go and to help people let go is because I don't hold fear in the same way. Over the years, I've learned to deal with fear and to let go of fear. And it's actually our fear that causes us to hold on and attach to things in a way that we're frightened of letting go. And therefore, the letting go becomes the struggle and we become grief-stricken in that, through that crippling grasping of holding on to things in the way they were, instead of letting them go into the slipstream of life, trusting, knowing that we are always connected, that there truly is ultimately no letting go. There is no loss. There's only the interconnected nature of everything.
Yes, I agree completely. But when we're talking about somebody that's grieving the loss of an experience or a loved one, implies letting go of the loved one, but that's not what you mean, is it?
No, and that's why it can be terrifying. If I let go, then there's nothing there and I'm left alone and I'm left with the loss and the lack and the absence and the void, when actually the irony or the paradox is that it's in the letting go that we get to feel the presence more, just in a different way.
Yes, exactly. So that's what I was talking about, taking it back to what I was talking about earlier, letting go but not letting it go, and allowing the love to grow even after somebody has died. And that happens when you let go of the resistance that they've moved on.
Yes, and the fear of, you know, the fears that come up for us in terms of, you know, what does that mean? What does that mean for me? How will that impact me in my physical, material, here and now sense? You know, the fear of feeling that absence. It's the changing, you know, when we let go of what was, we allow it to change form, to transform, and to become something more that can, I won't say become richer and fuller, but we get to experience that loss and the gain in a different way, that it has changed form. So it becomes a different experience of that person that we've lost, or that role that we've lost, or that security that we've lost.
It changes form, yes. You know, it's interesting that you use the word loss, because I had an interview with someone a couple of weeks ago and we spoke that there really isn't loss. It's all about grief and transforming that grief into something different, because loss means something different. It means that something's gone. And I remember speaking to our spiritual teacher, John the Beloved, and saying something like, I've lost him or I've lost it. And he made a joke and said, well, you're not that careless.
Thank you.
listening to Grief's Gift. If you resonate with what you're hearing, please don't forget to let your friends and family know. And if you have your own experience that you would like to share, please contact me on www.sharonsneer.com or on my email, sharon@sharonsneer.com. Thank you so much for listening, and now back to Grief's Gift.
And I would agree. I would say it's the appearance of loss or the illusion of loss.
I love that.
And that's where I say it is, it's the energy transforms, it changes forms.
Yeah, I love that. So tell me how you've experienced that in your own life.
So I was contemplating this before our conversation, and I'd say there's been three significant triggers for me that have involved a letting go and a transforming of the energy that it then comes back to me in a different form that is grief's gift. And I would say the first one would be the ending of my marriage in divorce, which happened, I can't remember how long ago now. I've finally shed the last layers of it, that I'm no longer counting the years by pre and post divorce. But for me, that was a very, very difficult decision to make. It took me three goes at actually making it. I didn't have the resources within me the first two times that I made the decision, but the third time I was in a different place within myself to be able to move forward from there. And I'd say the first loss or shattering of what was in my divorce was the loss of the family unit. The decision to end a marriage, and particularly when children are involved, to recognize that family unit that, you know, creates a bubble around you and your partner and your children that holds you in a certain energy, will never be the same again once that splits, once there's a crack in that unit. And so that was perhaps the first major loss in my life. And it took years to work through that energy, even though it was something of my choosing. But the loss of the family unit was perhaps the hardest fear for me to clear. That was the last fear I remember going away before I made that final decision and felt wholehearted and fully aligned within myself and at peace with the choice and the decision. I went away for a few days, and I took with me a whole lot of tools and resources to clear all of my fears. What were the fears that were holding me back? What was I frightened of? And the last fear that I cleared was the impact on my children at taking what I felt like I was taking that family unit away from them.
Yeah.
And it took me several years after divorce to uncover a very profound gift that came out of that for my children as much as for myself, which I could never have anticipated whilst I was in the marriage or struggling with the decision. And that gift was that in separating from their father, from my husband, I gave myself the opportunity to choose how I wish to be within myself. And the separation, not just within the family, but of the two parents in this instance, the two adults that were parenting their children. Whilst I was married, I was kind of protecting my children in a way, trying to smooth things over in terms of some of the difficulties in the marriage between the two parents. And in my smoothing things over and trying to protect my children, to make things easy, to avoid any tension, what I did was I became a merged version of myself. I merged with my husband's energy. I you know, tried to caretake some of the behaviors that were going on. I tried to, you know, divert my children's attention here or there. And so I wasn't being an authentic, true, full expression of who I was. But once we had physically separated and once we had divorced and the marriage was no more, I got to, because I was living on my own with my children part of the time, I got to decide how I wanted to live, who I wanted to be. I didn't have to report to anyone else in my decision-making and the choices I made. And so I became a much clearer, truer, more authentic, genuine, wholehearted version of myself. And what also happened was that my children got to see their father in his true, authentic, genuine version of how he chooses to be. And we actually became quite polarized in the people that we were. We were like opposite ends of the spectrum on a lot of things. And whilst that might have been difficult for my children initially, what it did do was give them this kind of polarity where I said to them, you get to choose. Like, you get to see how your father's being, who he's being in the world, how he's choosing to react and respond to life. You get to see your mother, how I'm choosing to be and respond and act in life. And then you, as the unique individuals that you are, you get to choose bits and pieces of what serves you, what is right for you, rather than getting this kind of mishmash version of the two of us enmeshed in unhealthy patterning and behaviors and conditioning that didn't really offer any light of choice to them. And I think had we have stayed married, they would have mimicked those behaviors and had more difficulty sort of discerning for themselves what is true and authentic for who and how they want to be in their lives and in the world. And that was a very unexpected gift, and one that I'm very, very thankful for, that I didn't stay merged and that I gave them contrast and duality to choose from how they want to be as their own person.
Well, what you gave them, which is such a generous offering, is actually freedom. You gave them the freedom to explore the polarization of mother-father. And even if you didn't fully feel comfortable with what was happening in other parts of their life with the other parent, you allowed them the experience and to experience it wholeheartedly. And I remember those times, Juliet, and I found that so inspiring that you just let go.
Yeah, and, you know, there were circumstances that meant I had to let go. I didn't necessarily feel I had a choice in that. But I also trusted that this too is happening for some higher purpose that I might not understand in the moment.
Yeah. I wonder how people that are listening, I mean, I'm sure there are many people that resonate and have done very similar things, but it's so hard, isn't it, to allow your children to struggle with a divorce and not interfere. And, you know, as a spiritual teacher, as spiritual beings working on a spiritual path, I wonder, did that help you? How did that help you?
I think it's friggin' hard as a parent to see your child struggle with anything, full stop. If you have a beating heart that's connected with your child. I remember distinctly when I was pregnant with my first child, once I'd had pregnancy test and maybe there was an ultrasound thrown in or something for good measure, but I remember a point where I made a conscious decision, okay, I'm going ahead with this pregnancy. It was never particularly considered otherwise, but I just remember a moment of choice, choosing that I'm going to have a baby. And in that moment of enormous joy of, okay, we're doing this, instantly I felt the potential for grief and loss in losing something that in that moment I had decided to embrace wholeheartedly and love. It struck me. It was like one moment, wow, and the next moment, oh, my God, what have I just done? There's the potential for heartache. If anything happens to this child that, you know, was a six-week-old embryo at that stage. And I think that is the journey of a parent. As soon as you connect with your child at whatever point, there is the potential for grief. There's the potential for something to happen to your child, for something to hurt for them, for them to graze their knee and fall over and cry. I remember the first time my firstborn had their first vaccination shot in the arm and they cried. And I went, oh, my gosh, I'm crying too. I have actually bonded with my child. And it doesn't matter what the struggle, whether it's a needle with a newborn or a graze when they fall over in the playground or coming home having had a bad day or, you know, difficulties with relationships or career or learning struggles or going through a divorce. If, you know, the moment we love something, be it a pet, be it a child, be it a partner, be it our family, be it a job, be it our life purpose, the moment we fully, you know, allow ourselves to wholeheartedly love something, where we also, in, you know, in our unconsciousness, in our ego mind, know we're also setting ourselves up for the potential of loss, which is perhaps why we fear dying.
Yes, yes. And I think that's the preparation. I mean, you know, the preparation meaning that there are so many wise people in the world, many people that have gone before us, but I'm thinking of one, Carlos Castaneda, and, you know, he's a very topical subject, but I loved it when he said, you have to imagine death on your left shoulder. And when you live with that realization, then you can truly live your life passionately. And I think that to open our heart to love, we are opening ourselves to grief at some point also. And it doesn't have to be our grief. It can be our children's grief. It can be that they didn't get onto the soccer team or they didn't get asked to perform in the end of year play or when they fell. I mean, how do we hold the space for grief for those we love without falling into grief ourselves?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure we can hold the space for their grief as much as we can just hold the space for them to experience their grief. And that's, I think that's the hardest thing to do as a parent. It never stops. You know, my mum is 84. She would still hold that same feeling of concern for me as a 55-year-old daughter. I still hold it for my 26-year-old and my 24-year-old children. Is whilst ever we love something, you know, the greater our love, the greater potential there is to feel those uncomfortable emotions of an energy of loss, of grief, of suffering, the suffering of those that we love. We take it to heart because they are in our heart.
That's right. And yet, as you've so clearly said, the greater the potential for a gift that could not even be imagined down the track, that's what grief can offer us once we've allowed ourselves the freedom to grieve in whatever way we need to, without judgment. And, you know, not pushing our loss and our grief under the carpet, but really sitting in the stillness and allowing ourselves to feel and to allow and to move through those really difficult and painful feelings. And when we've done that, grief has the power to transform itself and transform us into a place that we never imagined. And I think that is what grief's gift is. It's in retrospect, once we've allowed ourselves to fully experience our loss, our feelings, then we move forward and discover parts of ourselves that we never knew existed.
Yes, if we allow it. I mean, the other loss I experienced in my divorce many, many years ago was a loss of a group of friends who I very much held dear. Our social circle when I was married was a group of friends that were had gone to school with my husband. I had known them for 20 years. We had all gotten married together. We had raised children together. And then literally overnight when I separated, none of them spoke to me again.
Oh, wow.
And man, I was angry. I was pissed. I was furious more than anything. You can hear it in my voice now. So clearly I still have a little bit more to go. The fury was not that they didn't speak to me again, but that they didn't use their own brains, their own intelligence, or this is my judgment of it at the time, to surely after 20 years, you know who I am and whatever stories you've been told about me, to not use your own wisdom to go, hang on a minute, yeah, they don't really sound like the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And after 20 years of friendship, it's worth picking up the phone and just having a chat. But the reason why that didn't happen was, you know, I think, again, fear came into the mix in terms of, you know, when someone's marriage ends, it can threaten the stability of, and the security of our own marriage and cause us to go, you know, ask the question, well, what if that happened for me? And sometimes that's uncomfortable. And so people don't really want to know about that. So it's easier to just shut it all out and keep on keeping on as if nothing has really happened. And that was what happened for me. This circle of people who I love dearly were no longer there. And I found myself feeling very isolated and alone. And it took me years to appreciate what the gift of that was, because I now know with the benefit of Harry hindsight, had I have stayed in those circles of friendship, I would have kept myself being the same person that I was in relationship to those people and in relationship to those relationship dynamics ultimately. And so in not having that same energy in my life, it really did force me in a sense to make a new life and decide who and how I want to be and what type of relationships I want to be in and how I want to show up within those relationships. So it actually freed me and liberated me to go within. And I think that is the journey of grief and loss, to go within and to discover the more of myself that I was yet to uncover that wouldn't have been uncovered by those same friendships, because those were the friendships in my life that would have kept on keeping on the same way. Whereas there was another circle of friends that had come through my workplace, women who are still to this day my bestest of friends, who are all very much growth-oriented individuals who have all done incredible journeys themselves through life, where, you know, the only constant is perhaps change. And so I was catapulted out of one social network and into another social network. One was about stagnancy and the other was about change. And I know with the gift of grief that the energy of change has served me much better than the energy of same stagnancy and things not changing. I'd say that was a harder lesson in grief and loss and letting go than actually the breaking down of my family unit, because the breaking down of my family unit was something that I spent years, over a decade, working through and coming to terms with. The day when I finally ended the marriage, I was completely done. I had done and tried everything to make things work, and I was ready wholeheartedly 100% to walk away. This one, with the loss of friends, totally knocked me sideways. That was like a, you know, a right hook coming out of left field. That was a total shock and trauma to me, because it was completely unexpected.
Absolutely. How can you expect that? I mean, even after my husband died, I had people that never called me, good friends that I thought, you know, they would be there, never were able to pick up the phone, which of course is ultimately saying that they were afraid. They didn't know what to say. And that sound is my dog sitting by my feet resonating with us right now.
Which, of course, is ultimately about the other person, not you.
Yeah.
Tell me, one final question before we unfortunately have to go. Did you find that meditation, sitting in the stillness of your own being, helped you through those difficult times? Because I know that really did help me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also the most challenging part of it, I would say, is to sit in the stillness. Because it's there that all of our unresolved energies come to surface, come to light, and we have to sit with the discomfort of that and allow that to pass through and process it and unpack it and sit with compassion with it and allow it to bubble up and over and out. And that is the journey that we do.
Did you find a place or a way of being able to process your feelings in a way that served you even better than meditation?
I find physically writing with a pen and paper a very powerful, helpful tool to assist me when I'm processing things. I did a lot of journaling to get things up and out, and the more I wrote, the more the light of my consciousness shone on what it was that I was going through, that it gave me a better, deeper, fuller, richer understanding and appreciation and letting go and calling forth of the inner resources within me for me to see things differently and have a bigger perspective on things and to realize the hidden gifts within the grief, within the experience, within the loss, within the discomfort. So I would say meditation leads me to a deeper awareness of what's going on within, and I then take that with pen to paper to process it more and more and more.
Beautiful.
They were perhaps my most powerful tools, as well as having conversations with people that perhaps, you know, held me in a way to ask questions, to allow me to express, but to not join me in pity or sympathy, to join me with love and compassion and support, and just holding that light, knowing that this too shall pass, that you will come through this in a way that perhaps the comfort of knowing that they will be there on the journey with me.
Yeah. Well, that's how I experience you, especially when I was going through my loss of Oren. So thank you for being there for me then, and thank you for being in my life now. And thank you so much for such a wonderful conversation, Juliet. I really feel so moved and touched, and I know that your wisdom will make a difference to so many people. So thank you, sweetheart. Thank you.
Thank you for being the blessing in my life that you are, and in the life of so many other people that you touch.
Thanks, darling. Okay.
Big love.
Big love to you.